And welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Oh, welcome. Welcome to Seniors in the Building. Today, we are going to talk about our feral childhoods. We grew up in a time when childhood was loose and open. There were no phones, few rules, and long days outside where no one checked on us unless someone came home bleeding. We were not wild, but we were close enough that the word made sense. Looking back, it feels like another country.
We learned the world by touching it, climbing it, and I've got lots of stories about climbing, falling off of it. We rode too fast, wandered too far, and believed we were unbreakable. Our parents didn't hover. They hoped we had enough sense to come back in one piece. Most days we did.
We joke now that we were raised as feral children. It wasn't neglect, it was freedom. The kind that taught us how to judge risk, how to stand up after a bad fall, how to trust our wits when the ground gave way beneath us.
And so today we're telling those stories, the strange ones, the dangerous ones, the ones that still make us laugh and shake our heads. We survived our own small wilderness, and maybe that's why we are who we are now. So let's go back to where it all began.
Well, I don't have this as an earliest memory, but my mother told me I did this. So at 18 months old, we had a little kitten, and it had been raining outside, and the cat was outside and brought in, and so my mother had put the cat next to the wood stove to try to get it to dry off and get warmed up and everything, and I didn't think that was quite good enough, and so when she turned her back, I took the kitten down the hall to the dryer, and I put the kitten in the dryer. I regret this, but I killed the kitten. And my mother was just horrified. Like, she could not believe that a kid could do this, right? At 18 months old.
So it actually started to tumble.
Well, yeah, because you put it in, and then there was a stool there. It was easy to get up on the stool and push a button.
Oh, poor kitty.
I know. But, you know, one of my kids was joking with me. I think I was in my 30s or 40s, and they said, well, that's probably why we never had cats growing up with you, Mom. They were afraid of you. So, but, yeah.
Well, but that's a logical thing for an 18-month-old to do, to throw something in the dryer to get it dry.
Not recommended.
Not recommended.
Don't do this at home. Don't try this at home.
We're not recommending it.
So I probably wasn't the greatest person around animals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that when we grew up in a small town. I'm talking my brother and I, in northwest BC, a place called New Hazleton. That was our grade school years. And we did have pets, quite a few pets, because they roamed free just like we did. There were no real restrictions or leash laws or licensing laws. And, you know, we lived near a creek and there was forest all around, and we played in the forests and built forts and sledded in the winter. And in the summertime, you went out early in the morning, you know, during school vacation days, and you played till it was dark, maybe coming home for supper. And I think creating more anxiety for my mother than we realized at the time, because she was quite a worrier, and she had sometimes good reason, rightfully so. That's right. Yeah. So it was a pretty loose-free childhood. Yeah. And to top it all off, we didn't have television in this small town. TV signals couldn't come there, so that couldn't even be used to sort of pacify us or keep us indoors. So a lot of time spent outdoors.
Yeah, I would agree. My childhood was a lot like that. Yeah. I grew up in a very rural area. In the house that we lived in was on a half acre that connected to a swamp on one side and a big, huge field on the other that was hayed every year. It was hay, I think, pretty sure. and a grove of trees that was just beyond that, in two directions, and a major highway in front of us before they built a double lane highway that went through not our little town.
Mm-hmm.
But so there was this wilderness to the back of us and this major highway in front of us that we all learned at a very early age to not cross the road without assistance. But and we did have TV, and probably starting in the mid-1950s, but it was black and white, and we didn't watch it much.
Yeah.
We were outside. Mm-hmm. We were outside.
It was probably more around. For adults anyway back then. Hey?
Yeah, there were cartoons Saturday morning, and we'd watch the test pattern until they came on at 9 o'clock. But that was about it.
Yeah.
And Ed Sullivan on Sunday night.
I was thinking often that gives the impression that our parents were somehow irresponsible, but I know in my case it was more like, well, you go ahead and do this, or you have freedom, but if something goes sideways, then the restrictions come in. And I remember particularly one instance where my father, I think it, with right thoughts, thought it would be a good idea for my brother and I to have BB guns or pellet guns. And that was all pretty good. And we learned target practice, and the odd time we try to get a squirrel or a sparrow sitting in a tree or on a telephone line. But if we tried to turn it on each other, which I think happened once or twice, then you lost the privilege. Then
That's
it was
right.
gone. So there was discipline, but it was often after the fact.
Yeah.
So.
We would make slingshots.
Oh, yes.
And shoot acorns in the fall.
Yeah.
Because they were great bullets, right?
At each other.
No kidding.
And, at each other. Yeah, we had wars in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, and I mean.
That, and BB gun, too, but I don't remember shooting at each other.
No.
We weren't as wild as people growing up in northwestern BC.
No.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Well,
yeah.
If he did that, it was not at the face kind of thing.
Oh, right. Don't hit the face.
But you grew up in a town that was a little bigger, I think.
Mm. Yeah. It was 5,000-10,000. I don't know.
It's a different thing when you grow up in a rural area.
And you know, my mother came from a family of 12, right? And so they were all taught to manage each other in some ways. You manage the younger ones or whatever. And I'm the oldest of six. And that was kind of an expectation, right? That I would manage, kids that my mother just thought, well, six kids can kind of get wherever they need to go. I mean, in the early years, you know, she had me on a clothesline with a harness on a clothesline out in the field, right?
Because like a dog run.
Well, I was this little blonde-haired kid, right? And I wasn't a very big kid ever. Like, I was always the smallest or, you know, the shortest everywhere. And so in order for her to see where I was, you know, she had to have me on that line because the grassland behind our house, you know, I could easily bury myself in there.
You'd be lost.
She didn't know what else would be out there as well, right? You know, and so she had me on a clothesline, you know, to keep track. And I'm pretty sure she did that for my other siblings as well, you know. But we were always the ones who had to take care of them, whether they did stupid things or not, you know. I still remember my sister jumping up on the back end of a horse, like running and then jumping on this horse and going galloping down the field. And I don't know, maybe she was about 6 or 7 years old, and then fell off and broke her arm, right? And my dad said to her, well, this is what happens when you do stupid things, you know? I mean, he take her to the hospital and...
Yeah, sort of learning through experience.
I can't remember any broken bones in our family, which is probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. Except I think one of my sisters fell off the basement stairs once and... Mm-hmm. Broke a collarbone, but you don't do much with that. You just have to immobilize it a little bit. Anyway, but the rest of us, we were doing all kinds of crazy things on our bikes and falling off and skidding through gravel and oh my god,
skinning
that gravel burns
hurt. Jack, you mentioned at the intro something about a lot of stories about climbing. Is there any?
Yeah, there were pine trees in our yard. It's hard to say how tall they were because I was probably 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. But we would climb up those pine trees. I can still remember the branches. You know, they almost come straight out. Mm-hmm. And hands just covered with pine sap.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But we would go right to the top and be able, and just were enamored with, yeah, and they swayed, in the wind up there.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then looking out at Selkirk.
Oh, yeah, you'd see
you could see the whole town from up there. I don't know how my parents, well, my mom, who my dad was always at work, would have thought of that. And one time I started to fall, like I lost footing or something, and I managed to grab on because there were so many branches. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to fall to the ground, but it was high. Yeah. I'll bet it was a good quarter mile high.
Yeah.
I don't know how high it was. From a little person's perspective, it was high.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, and no fear. No, yeah.
Absolutely. I needed to get to the top. That was the goal.
Yeah.
And then one time on another tree, I fell like this on my wrist, bent inward, and broke my wrist.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, I was so mad at myself for not getting my hand down.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, you would have broken it the other way.
But you've broken it anyway, the other way, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't remember a lot of broken bones either, but I just remember stupid games, right, that were kind of dangerous in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
The neighbors' kids and us, we had a kind of a swampy land and had a bunch of brambles, you know, sharp thorns and all that kind of stuff in one side of it. And we would have races to see who could get through those brambles the fastest, right?
Oh,
and count
goodness.
The seconds down, right? And then when we got through, then we would see who had the least amount of scratches because they did the best job. The best run, right? I mean, that is stupid stuff, right? And I would never let my own children do something so ridiculous, right?
Well, but, so we think.
Oh, so we think, but we don't know what they did, right? Yeah, sometimes.
Well, the one thing that I did that was really dangerous and crazy was just up the hill from our house was this major road was a bridge that went over a train tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And along the side of the bridge, of course, there's these cement sides. So this is my very daring thing, I got up and walked all along the top of that concrete
railing of
rail.
Yeah.
With the road on this busy road on one side and the, you know, 50-foot drop to the railway.
Yeah.
Railroad tracks on the other side.
Yeah.
No harness, no.
No harness. Yeah. And no no safety net, but anyway, I never told my mother that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
We used to build forts a lot. You
mentioned
building forts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we would, in order to have construction material, we would go into construction sites and borrow some boroughs. But one time we had this fort, I'll never forget it, because there were two instances that happened in that fort. Mm-hmm. We had a trap door and a ladder going up to it. And so we'd open the trap door, and we actually had hinges on it, so we could flip it open and then crawl up and close the door. Well, one time, in order to keep it warm, so it must have been the fall, we put tar paper. Again, I don't know where we got the tar paper from. And lined the inside with tar paper. Well, for some reason, I don't know who did it, the tar paper got caught fire.
Because you lit a fire up there. That's where
the trap door was closed, and we couldn't get the damn thing open. Finally, we got it open and climbed the ladder down. And the other time, that tree fort incident, I had the hatchet.
Mm.
And I had just gone into the barn where there was a grinding stone to sharpen it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I took the hatchet and I was going out to the fort and I thought, well, I should see how sharp this is. So I picked up a chip of wood, held it up to the tree and tried to cut it.
Yeah.
Well, I missed and cut the top of my thumb off.
And then you have
which,
to go.
Which is still numb. I don't feel the top of my thumb.
Know, then you have to go back and show your parents. Yeah. Go, oh, look, I'm bleeding.
Well, first I went to the hospital to have it sewn back on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's...
And I rode in the carrying what's in on a bike.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
A friend brought me...
A basket?
A basket.
The
basket. I was sitting in
front of
the basket.
They rode you hanging, on a bike to the...
hanging on to the bars.
Yeah, bleeding.
To the hospital. Oh. Screaming and bleeding.
Well, bicycles were my downfall, too, because I remember, I think I was 9 or 10 years old, and my girlfriend was letting me double behind her to take me home, right, from her place to my place. And my feet got caught in the back spokes.
Oh,
and, geez. Of course, oh, just jarred her, and then we just fell over and, you know, had some damage. But anyway, yeah, it was just like, I'm never getting back on that bike again. Bikes
Well, they messed up your feet a bit.
They messed up my feet, right, some of my nerves in my feet, too, you know. And yet here I was, you know, on a bike tour with Rick in 2018, had a bike accident, right? I don't know why I get back up on a bike sometimes when I think about all the times I got hurt on a bicycle.
Oh, is this the helmet saved lives incident?
That was the helmet saved lives, yeah, my first words.
Yeah, see, there's learning. There's always valuable learning experiences coming out of this, yeah.
Well, I can't even imagine having a helmet on as a child, right?
Or seatbelts.
Or seatbelts.
As a child. Oh, yeah, riding in the back of trucks.
I mean, six kids in the back of a station wagon, right? All loose. We went all the way from
North... Jumping and bouncing on the seats.
Right, we went from Northwest BC to Colorado to visit one of my aunts, right? And I mean, I don't know how the heck we did that.
Same with us.
The youngest kid was... He was only a few months old.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And how dangerous, right? But we don't think about those things at the time, right?
No, we piled in, 8 of us, because there were 6 of us kids too, into a, you know, a big old Chevy, and we'd go camping. We'd be driving and putting your arm out when you did a quick stop to prevent the kids from flying into the windshield.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I know. Yeah. Well, I was 5 or 6, I think, when I gave my siblings a truck ride. Parents had an old panel truck, sat in the driveway, and I always thought, I mean, I thought in my head then, but I thought it was just a flat driveway, right? So I would just go from one end of the driveway, you know, and back up, and the kids would get a ride, and then I'd bring them kind of backwards. But there was a bit of a incline, and after I had them in the car, and in the inside the truck, and in the back end of the truck, it started to go and went flying off across the road and into the ditch, right? And I jumped out before I got to the ditch and left them all in there, right? And I mean, like, you know, I don't know where my mother was, but I just think she, you know, she probably died many times. Her heart must have stopped many times with our family.
Yeah.
With six
tolerance
kids.
Our parents must have had in the car with four unbuckled kids.
Yeah.
Bouncing on the back seats.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, I can't imagine.
Well, even with seatbelts, Rick had to usually sit in the back seat between two kids and one in the front seat with me, because we couldn't travel with those three in the back seat for long distances.
Right.
I mean, there'd be constant pushing and shoving and yelling so it was easier. Mm-hmm. So Rick usually got the back seat.
Focus, yeah. Sort of what I was thinking, a bit of a different track, is how we also did learn and teach one another. I was thinking of all the games we used to play, like tag and hide and seek and get into snowball fights.
Right.
And I know, play a game called Red Rover. And you'd sort of learned an idea of fairness, you know, that there are rules, you know, even if there were no written rules, and you had to play fair. And if you were picking teams, you know, they had to be balanced and equal. And if one side was unbalanced, that's just not fair. So that even at that age, and it's not that some adult was supervising us, but, you know, fairness was important. Or like if you had a snowball fight, which is fine, but you don't put rocks inside the snowball, and you don't make an ice ball, and because that's not fair. That's not right.
Interesting.
And, so there was some self-supervision.
So you sort of have your own sense of what's safe and what's not as a kid.
Safe too, yeah. Yeah, you learn that.
We lived on the main road through Selkirk. Mm-hmm. And there was a big, there was a hill, it seemed big, probably about 10 feet up, mm-hmm. where the sidewalk was, and our yard was down below. So we would throw snowballs at the cars that drove down the main street.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And we learned good throwing techniques, like how to throw ahead of the car so that it would hit the front windshield at maximum impact.
Time it right.
Without missing it. But anyway, suddenly we noticed the cop cars with their a cop car with its light on come into our long driveway. It was quite a long driveway. Uh-huh. And they were just angry that we would... Well, I think they talked to the parents because we disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we would... But we didn't put stones in the snowballs.
No, no. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that would have been a good idea, actually, now that you mention it.
Had you thought about it?
So, yeah.
I was thinking, in addition to learning how to throw accurately and properly, you also probably all learned how to run in the snow and on the ice really fast, too, to get away afterwards.
Yeah. I remember the challenge was to lead the car, throw the snowball so it was quite a bit ahead. And then the car would drive into it.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling such a sense of satisfaction when that snowball smashed into the front windshield of a car. The other thing I remember is gang mentality. I learned gang mentality.
Yeah.
The little gang, there were two little gangs, actually, we had in the neighborhood. And when we got together, it was just hell on wheels.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing we couldn't do. One time we dug a hole, because it took, I don't know, it must have been four or five of us dug a hole in the field behind us. And we ended up putting logs across the top and then cabbage leaves top and then mud.
Yeah.
So the hole disappeared.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't see
camouflage.
It. But then we were told that hole has to be filled in because if a tractor comes by, working the field, it's going to go in the hole.
Uh-huh.
And we were so disappointed that we had to fill in that hole. I think we filled it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if a tractor ever fell in.
Yeah.
But that raises the issue for me. I heard some psychologists on the radio talking about memory. And they were saying that every time we recall a particular memory from our youth, especially, we reconstruct it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I doubt whether any of this was ever true.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
I can remember talking about pranking. We always went trick or treating in town when it was Halloween, and our church was that we went to as little kids was just up on the hill and on the route in terms of a street where we were trick or treating, and we got it in our heads that we were going to ring the bell in the belfry, church belfry. And my dad, who was a volunteer firefighter, was sort of doing patrol around the town with another fellow, dad in town who was also a firefighter, a volunteer firefighter. And when they heard the bell ringing, my dad knew instantly who had done it, because we would be the only ones who would know how to get into the church and have a whole idea, because we'd rung the bell before to go up and ring the bell. And so he was sort of colluding with us, because when Reuben, the guy that was with him, wanted to go find these hooligans that were ringing the church bell, he sort of redirected him in another place. And let's look over here and let's go over there and sort of let us get away.
Oh, okay.
But that was the funniest thing when we came home and he told us, and we realized he knew that we had done it, and then told us what he'd done
to protect you a bit,
reroute this guy who was hell bent on finding whoever had done it.
We learned
those were the days that the churches weren't locked, right?
that's right. Just go in.
We
learned social responsibility and the power of the group. One year, I think when I was in grade 5 or 6, we had a teacher that really wasn't very well liked, and she lived in this house right on the school grounds called the Teacherage. Well, one night, three guys snuck into, well, it wasn't much to sneak, went to where her car was and let the air out of her tires.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, not a major prank, but it was a prank. Well, they got caught. So the ruling came from not just her, but from the higher up, the principal of the school, that the school grounds were now closed to the kids after school. You could not be on the school grounds.
Oh, that's
and this
terrible.
Was everybody. You know, there were
everybody
three. Everybody was punished. So we thought this was hugely unjust because that's where the swings were, that's where
Absolutely.
The soccer and
Who
the baseball field
go to the
was.
Playground after
yeah.
school.
And so we launched a protest. There were about a half, 6 or 7 or 8 of us, and we made signs. And seriously, we marched up and down in front of the school chanting, "We want the school grounds, and we want the school grounds." We went back and forth. We did this for about, yeah. and you know, adults go by and look at us with weird looks, or some of them smile, and some of them wonder. And I don't think our parents knew till after the fact. But within 2 days, it was decreed that only those three who had caused the mischief were banned from the school
well,
grounds, and everyone else
more
could go.
Is that?
So we felt the power of protest made
yes.
a difference, and that sticks to me to yeah, this day. You've got to stand up and speak out.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
Yeah. So
I think that's a great thing to learn. I mean, I still remember a teacher who professed some feminist views, right, about women, and was probably one of the first women libbers in Terrace, right?
Uh-huh.
And we had a little gathering at the local park, little park, you know. And so my dad said I couldn't go. And I thought, nah, I'm 12, I'm old enough. And so I did the thing that I'm most scared of. We lived across the river from the town of Terrace. So we lived in a little unincorporated place called Thornhill. And so we had to cross the bridge to get over into Terrace to go to this park. And it had a wooden platformed
walking bridge.
Oh. But a car bridge too was next to it, right?
Okay.
And then the walking bridge was wooden slats, but they weren't all together, right? They were separated, right? And so I was never brave enough to cross that thing, but I was just so determined to go against my dad, right? And I'm just gonna go into town, and I practically cried the whole way across the bridge and freaking right out about seeing the water below and everything. But I got there, and I got to that little protest kind of group thing, march.
And that's a story about you I've never heard before.
Well, and it's interesting. I only remembered it when we did the women's march here in Winnipeg
yes.
that time.
Yeah.
And somebody said, when was your very first women's march? And I was like, I don't know. Oh, maybe it was when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and mm-hmm. she just,
that's right.
you know. So I think you're right. Like, when you're younger, you learn some... you do learn
values,
how to take
yeah.
some risks, right? Mm-hmm. And you learn how to use those risks to the best of your ability. Like, what
yeah.
can that teach you as you go forward in life too, right? You know?
Yeah, and that reminds me one thing about the town we grew up in, and I think it was the age more than just the location, but one negative was that gender stereotypes were pretty strong. And mm-hmm. although it was a small town, so if you played softball, everybody pretty well had to play. But certain other sports and other activities, it's boys only. It's
yeah.
not for girls. And when you're talking about what your future is going to be, this is what boys do when they grow up to be older, to be young men and men, and this is what girls do, right? So, and maybe that was across all kind of sizes of cities or cultures, but in North America. But it was pretty strong, and it took some years of unlearning through later high school and university to unlearn those very strong negative gender stereotypes, because usually as a male it meant you get the prize, you know, especially a white male,
and women
don't have the same privileges, you know, they got to keep in their place. So.
Little Woman, the
Definitely.
Book Little Woman, mm-hmm. actually was the one that kind of got me thinking
yeah.
about
mm-hmm.
That women have a higher place, and that was Joe was going to mm-hmm. be so determined to be a writer and be different than the rest of her family, mm-hmm. and she wasn't going to get married and have kids, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what prompted me at that age. You know, it's kind of funny how you think about those.
It is. I can remember in junior high, you know, how well, I don't know. In there were a couple of girls that were very bossy, and they were bullies,
mm-hmm.
really.
Yeah.
And they would create all these little cliques, and then decide who was out and who was in.
Yes.
Yeah. And I got so mad one day, I just I started yelling at her, and I said, "You have no right to do that," and just blasted her. And she had the audacity to come up to me and say, "You hurt my feelings."
Oh, yeah.
I said, "Well, you hurt a lot of people's feelings yeah. all the time.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself."
Good answer, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we became friends, actually. Okay. And she was very different after that. Mm. Very different.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was the first time I'd ever called somebody on their behavior that was hurting other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if we did a lot of that risk taking because we thought we were cut off from doing other things, right? That the boys got to do, right? You know.
Who knows?
I mean, in some ways, when I reflect back, I think all the things I tried to do were just outside of what the norm was in terms of, like, my dad, you know, "You're going to go to university and you're going to be a teacher or a nurse." And I'm like, "I'm not going to go to university and I'm not going to be a nurse or a teacher," right? But in the end, the only way I could get it paid was if I went into teaching. So I went into teaching. And to be honest, I'm glad I left that field, you know, because it felt like it was where the woman had to be, right, if you were going to do that. And
for you, yeah.
For me, right? And yeah. I think that's part of what we learn when we're younger, even when we do the risky kinds of things.
Right. You do still have paths that people put you on and tell you that you things that you can and can't do.
And of course every kid likes a dare, right? I mean, who doesn't? They all jump at it, right? I dare you to jump off of whatever. You know, I think about two of our guys. I was one of those moms who made capes. Superman, Batman.
Oh yeah. Whatever,
capes. And two of them decided to learn how to fly with their capes out the window. 1.5-story window, right? And they weren't hurt. But, you know, like, dared each other to do that, right? And that's kind of what we do sometimes, right?
I think I was thinking of what you were saying, Rick, about protesting the closing of the schoolyard.
Playground.
Oh, yeah. The gangs that... Two gangs that I hung out with had far more negative influence than positive, because it was the dare, but it was also the peer pressure of the group.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we were little thieves. We would, for example, this is terrible when I think about it, but we were into hockey cards, and I wish I had them still, all those old hockey cards. But we would stand in the store, one behind each other. And when, I forget his name, because we used to remember his name, the person who ran the store, older gentleman, we would grab the hockey cards and pass them backwards down the line. And I don't know how many we stole, but we were little thieves.
It was terrible. Is there a statute of limitations on this?
I don't know. We were never taught.
Is that a function of really not having any money? Like, we grew up with no money. There was no discretionary income to provide to the
probably.
Kids.
Probably.
Not allowances, right?
We didn't. I think a pack of hockey cards was 5 cents or something like
but
that.
But who had that? Like, who had that?
Well, we would pick bottles. We would, as
a
gang,
we'd go
down the ditch for miles, it seemed, and pick bottles and then turn them in.
Yeah.
So we could buy hockey cards.
I was also wondering, because it was, I think we have this common sort of semi-rural or rural and outdoorsy experience. One of the other things we learned, some of it by organized teaching, like say Cub Scouts, and some of it just by...
Or 4-H.
Yeah,
4-H was a big one I was involved
and
in.
And how we learned certain valuable outdoor skills, like, you know, sort of fishing, or even if we didn't have rifles, you know, hunting, safety, those kinds of things. Because some of those learnings, you know, tying knots.
Absolutely, you're right.
How to build a campfire. Those are the kinds of learnings that sort of stuck with you. Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
And I remember being so comfortable being outside and so comfortable when we were camping that I would sometimes go just take my sleeping bag and go to the bush that was beyond the field and just sleep out outside all night.
Yeah. Oh, we did that too. Yeah, 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 just sleep under the stars.
Freaked
yeah.
my mother out. But
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
When I was in grade two, my dad was building a new house for us, and so we lived in a big white army tent right on the shores of a lake for that summer, four or 5 months, right?
What an adventure.
And so there were only five kids then, but because my youngest brother, I think, would have only been 1 or 2 years old. And, you know, I don't think, like, my mother would sit outside, but I don't think she ever really noticed how many times we would just run into the lake, or we'd be going down the shoreline, miles down the shoreline, right. without right. any supervision or whatever. You know, I think of that as the most idyllic mm-hmm. summer I ever had in my whole yeah. life, right? But the dangers that were there were every single day, you know, you wondered, or we burned ourselves at the fire, pit, right? Because everybody had to play with the fire, right?
Right, exactly.
And so, yeah, you sort of, you, like you said earlier about the fact that you sometimes restructure that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think about it now as an adult, knowing all the unsafe things. But at the time, my memory was, this was just the most beautiful time yeah. to be free. We didn't have to wear shoes. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very free life, but I hope we're not giving the impression that it was somehow so undisciplined. I mean, we were just sort of one step away from, you know, destroying our own lives in that.
Well, we were very close to delinquents.
Okay.
All right. There's no question about that.
Really?
In terms of stealing and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the issue of memory is interesting because I can't remember when the last time my brother and I, who's 4 years younger, I think, mm-hmm. Talked about this. But I was together with siblings and we were talking about childhood memories. And I was remembering being at Willow Island on the marshy side fishing, where we always would go with my grandparents and my parents, and then running up and down the shoreline there. Well, we would catch these mud pouts, and the mud pouts had a fin straight up like a needle sticking
Ooh.
Out. And I stepped on it, but here's the thing. My brother says, no, I didn't step on it. He stepped on it and was rushed to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Because it went deep.
Penetrated.
I don't think it went right through the foot, but
yeah.
we both have vivid memories of it happening to us.
Yeah.
And we can't resolve, in fact, what the fact was. Mm-hmm. And our mother's gone, so she can't tell us.
There
about
was
it.
No leftover scar on the bottom of the foot where you could
I
compare scar.
I can't get at that and, foot anymore to look at it.
Well,
no, I don't think so.
No, okay.
But the concern was infection because it was on a fish's fin.
Of course.
Fin,
yeah.
Fin, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
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 Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that brings back
well, and even throwing sticks,
but we
right?
we laughed about that because we both have the same memory.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Well, so sharing memories can be fun, but sometimes it can be contentious as well.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a lot of reconstruction that goes on each time it's mm-hmm. recalled.
Yeah. Or that somebody else brings another aspect to that perspective, right, that you didn't have before.
I'm thinking of, my own siblings when we talk about the stuff that happened and how everybody's memory is just a little bit different.
Yes.
Yeah, they focused on something else, right, you know?
Exactly.
Well, I remember our sister, my older sister, she's the oldest of the four, was writing a book about my dad, and she wrote one about my mom as well, and their lineage and where they came from and so on. And in it, she read this to us, mm-hmm. the boys, the three mm-hmm. boys, wanting to pass it by us. And she referred to our dad as small and weak.
Mm.
Well, all three of us boys, we said, hold on, that's not true.
Mm.
He was quite muscular and very athletic.
Huh.
And he wasn't weak.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we had
memory,
a totally different memory of our dad.
It can go that, it can run that.
It was unreal.
Wow. Yeah, I've never had a lot of those conversations with my brother. I wonder if we engaged in some. We don't live in the same
whether
city.
Whether there's parallel
Where there's
memories.
Parallels or some different interpretations or different understandings of similar events, similar people,
One of my earliest memories was this. I'm showing my right index finger. Mm-hmm. That is still from early childhood, putting my finger inside one of the old ringers in the washer.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah.
Crunch. And it cracked it.
Yeah.
And it's been with me ever since. Uh-huh. Separated the nail in two pieces.
And yeah. It just stays that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just stays that way.
That would have hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Because I put it in this way.
Really tight. Lot,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder, though, would any of us regret the kind of upbringing we have? I guess it makes us who we are, but these experiences we have, I find that when I reminisce and think back, even the negatives, even sort of the bad stuff, even when you did get caught doing something wrong, I still would think, yeah, that it was a great childhood. Yeah,
I think one of the negatives, at least that's my, I have a sense that it's negative, is because we had gone through what we went through in terms of freedom and taking risks and these horror stories, were we not a little bit overguarded with our kids? Like, I think we were to some degree.
Yeah, I don't think that was the case with us.
No, in fact, I think it was the opposite. And part of that was because my dad was a strict disciplinarian, used corporal punishment regularly, and I said, this is not going to happen,
right?
You know, and I tried, and sometimes it didn't work.
Yeah, sometimes we did,
and I tried to forgive myself for those things, but I was pretty much not going to do that, right?
But were they allowed to run feral?
Well, I would say that I think so.
In Thunder Bay, we had a creek running through the backyard, and they often went and played there. So
played
I think
there
they,
and fished. And
no, you'd have to ask them, but I think we allowed them a fair bit of independence.
Yeah,
you know.
See, I think because we had just two children, as opposed to the six that I came from, we were much more equipped in many ways to be engaged in their lives, but I don't believe that we hovered.
We were guarded.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe we hovered. There might have been some times.
Yeah, and we lived away from family.
We did
for
too.
So, you know, we only a couple of years in their life did we live close enough to be a 3-hour drive. So we raised our kids away from a family system that was different.
That's right.
I think that's part
right.
of it. So we had different values. We also learned different values when we went away to university.
Right.
So in the education system, even though I was not happy about being in teaching, there were some things in the education system around psychology and sociology and those kinds of things that I learned about how you treat children, how you work, you know, do that. And I still recall, even as an early young parent, there. Barbara Colarossi's theory around it, let them be as free as they can, except for if it's unsafe, illegal, and immoral.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it just sits with me.
Yeah.
It still sits with me, right? You know. And sometimes when the boys have said something, Mom, you should have, you know, been more strict with us about blah 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 blah. And I say, well, at the time, I thought it wasn't illegal, it wasn't immoral.
But
it's
unsafe is exciting.
True.
Right. Yeah.
Like you walking across that bridge, really.
Right. Yeah.
And that was me.
Oh,
yeah. And we both crossed
across
the bridge.
Oh, yes, right. You didn't tell you that. That's
right.
Speaking of unsafe, I still have a scar, though I think it's faded now, on my cheek because we were into firecrackers during firecracker season. I don't remember when that was. But we, of course, wanted the biggest and most powerful firecrackers you could get. They were called Blockbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And one time we put a Blockbuster, or I put a Blockbuster, into a big Coke bottle and put the lid on it and then ran behind a tree to hide. And I peeked out just as it exploded and a piece of glass hit my cheek.
So it missed your eye.
Missed my eye, yeah. But the eye didn't escape everything. My left eye had a bow and arrow shot into it because we would make out of these red willows because they bent really well.
I know.
Bow and arrows.
Yeah, we did too.
And we would shoot those at each other.
What did they
say? We made whistles out of those.
It's all fun till someone loses an eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a phrase that you hear?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, well, it didn't hit right in the middle, luckily. It hit on the side, and I guess I was okay because I can still see out of it.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we've had a lot of stories that we've found that caused us to laugh and to shake our heads, and again, we've survived our own wilderness experiences, and so we hope that you'll do some thinking about the stories that are your life and what your feral childhood was like as well.
If it was that.
If it was feral, yeah. Take care. Have a good day. Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community. And keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.